broadcast of Home and Family Finance originally aired March 12th of this year.
Welcome to Home and Family Finance with Paul Barry. It's your family, it's your finances, and it's your future. Home and Family Finance is sponsored by the Defense Credit Union Council, serving those who serve our country, and by CUNA, the Credit Union National Association. Now, here's the host of Home and Family Finance, Paul Barry.
Now in our 10th year, folks, can you believe that? We've been talking to you about the importance of being financially fit for over 10 years. I hope you are. And of course, you know the other name of the program is, Are You Financially Fit? Are you financially fit? And you know what I mean by that, don't you? Are you making more than you spend, or are you spending more than you make? Do you have 6 months of what I call survival funds in your savings account, not to be touched? Add up all of your expenses, your monthly expenses, mortgage, rent, utilities, food and drink, clothes, cleaning, fuel, transportation, everything. And do that 6 times. And you don't have to be in a hurry, but get it done and put that away. Have 6 months of your survival funds available to you, because you never know what's going to happen. You never know. Then I want you to also have 3 months of emergency funds. And now the difference is that survival funds are for your survival. Emergency funds are for those things that happen to you and to others. As you know, something will happen, and you're going to get a call from a relative, from a child, from someone saying, I need help. I don't want you touching your survival funds to do that. Go into your emergency funds, and if you feel like it's worthy, then make the loan. But leave your survival funds alone. And finally, you must save. Are you saving at least 5%? That is no, 5% is what I'm asking. Everything you make. Starting right now, put away 5% of everything you make. Okay? Not a lot of money. If you want to put away more, please do. That is being financially fit, or at least the start of it. Lots of other things can happen. Anyway, we're glad to be with you today, and thanks so much for joining us. I have a great show with you. Great guests who are waiting to come by. As you know, for the past several weeks, we've been talking about the issue of divorce, marriage and divorce. Over 2 million of you will marry this year, 2 million of you, but 1 million of you will end up in divorce. Just a matter of fact. And you can check it out on Google, wherever you want to go, and check out and see what happens. But why? We've had the divorce dance author on the program. I've given you the latest Experian study results, and they all say the same thing, that one of the issues at play, aside from cheating, obviously, the most important is finances. We fight over money. We don't know what we should know. We don't follow what we should know. Well, let me tell you something. Chris and Marlo Felton are Amazon's number one best-selling authors of The Prosperity Factor. They have a combined 29 years experience in the financial services industry, working with couples of all walks of life. Chris and Marlo are recognized public speakers in the financial services industry and facilitate seminars teaching others how to break destructive financial patterns. They're here because they're going to talk to you about financially the harmony that is necessary when it comes to finances. And if you're not dealing with this, you're probably arguing with someone that you love a lot. You're probably very sorry. Let me welcome them both to the show. Nice to have you with us, Chris and Marlo. Thank you.
Hi, Paul. Thanks for having us.
Well, it's a pleasure.
We are excited to be on the show. Thanks, Paul.
Thanks very much. When I read through the material, Chris and Marlo, I was just struck by what you were saying. Money habits and financial personalities are now on the list of what makes a mate attractive. Maybe you want your man to be good looking. Maybe she has to have a great personality. But just as important these days is there a financial connection? What do you mean by a financial connection, folks?
This is Marlo. I think I'll answer that question first, then we can let Chris answer and see if our answers match up.
Okay. Like that's kind of how it works.
That's how it works. Okay.
I go second. Go ahead. Sorry.
Well, I call it financial compatibility, and many couples are not financially compatible, meaning they're not really on the same page about where they should be with saving and how they spend their money. And often that can just be remedied with some conversation and goal setting and just discussion about it. Chris and I, unfortunately, didn't have that conversation when we should have, we figured it out after we got married, but mm-hmm. really the time to do that and figure it out is before you get married, because it can destroy a very loving and passionate relationship, which is kind of
it's too bad, isn't it?
It actually does happen.
Why don't we? Nobody wants to talk about whether I'm a spender or I'm a saver, or do we agree on what we should be doing, or a thousand things that associate with money, and yet we don't talk about that. Why not, Chris?
Well, I mean, it's uncomfortable, and you know, if when emotion goes up, intelligence goes down. I don't know if you've ever heard that before, but when emotion goes up, intelligence goes down, and most people, unless they have made the decision that they're going to have the conversation, they just seek comfort, and we see it with couples all the time. It's not a difficult conversation. It's just easier not to do it. And so it's just easier to not, you know, I don't want to ruffle the feathers, or, you know, and as humans, we're just phenomenal storytellers. So we just make up stories about everything.
Yeah. But
go ahead. So it's just, it's going to be stressful. It's going to be hard. It's going to be difficult. They're going to get angry. So we make up that internal story, and then it's just easier not to do it, because why would you want to go through all that?
Yeah, so just try to ignore it and act like it's never going to come up again, but that's not true, is it?
No, absolutely not, and it will come up, and we have seen it time and time again. Many people are delusional in thinking that it'll just go away or work itself out, and I am here to tell you it won't. And it popped up for Chris and I, and that's part of the story that we tell.
All right, well, hold on to that story, because I want to get to it. Marlo and Chris Felton, they know firsthand what it's like. They used to be one of those couples whose marriage suffered due to their financial situation. When we come back, they'll tell you how to avoid it and how to recognize it. And is this more important than sex? This is Home and Family Finance.
Want you to be part of the show. Email us with your financial questions. Ask about the Defense Credit Union Council. Tell us what topics you want to hear about, or just let us know what's on your mind. We'll give you the address in a few minutes. But now, more of Home and Family Finance with Paul Berry.
This broadcast of Home and Family Finance originally aired March 12th of this year.
My guest Marlo and Chris Felton, they know firsthand, again, what it's like to be involved in a marriage situation where you have not worked out the financial differences. And we all have differences. And so you've got to talk about that, folks. Their new book is Couples Money. The book Couples Money. So that's available to you. And Marlo, you can tell us where we can find that and talk about what we were talking about here. What happens?
So, well, I'll tell you firsthand what happened to us and what we learned from it. Because that was really the most important lesson from what happened to us. So it was probably about 10 years ago, and Chris and I had just gotten married, and we hadn't had a solid financial planning conversation or gotten on the same page about our finances. And I was living in a delusional world in my mind and getting more and more frustrated with Chris, not saying anything to him, thinking things would work themselves out. And I just began to get more and more frustrated. And I remember one night, and I know Chris remembers this night vividly.
Oh, yeah.
It was 10 years ago, because I got super frustrated, and there were some expenses that came up, and we didn't have the emergency fund set aside. And I blew up, and I threw my purse at him, not just once, but twice. And you know, broke a compact and rattled off all the things I was frustrated and angry about with him. And then Chris stopped me dead in my tracks with a really important question. And I know he remembers this question. Do you remember what you said?
Yeah, I do. I asked her, why are you still married to me?
And I thought, well, and I was so blinded by
that. Was a good one, wasn't it?
It was good. Well, it was an interesting question at the time, and it knocked me dead in my tracks, because I was so blinded by frustration, I couldn't even see straight, and I couldn't even remember why I married him in the first place. And that's when I realized that I had a choice, and I could either stay married to him or we could get divorced. And I had to come up with a new list. I had to come up with a why am I married to Chris Felton list instead of the here's all the things I'm angry and frustrated about. So I had to shift my focus.
Okay.
And I talk a lot about shifting your focus and changing your life, and that's pretty much what happened.
And what did you switch to? Tell me, what I know you're saying that you got to be on the same page. You have to have a mutually agreed upon financial segregation system that works for you both. I mean, is that where you went, Marlo? Where did you go to say, okay, let's get this off on the right foot, because if we don't, we're going to be separated?
Right. So I had to clearly define what I wanted my life to look like. And fortunately for Chris, that included him.
Yahoo!
Because I'm pretty good looking, Paul. I don't know if you've seen me on my on our website.
No, but I'm going to go right there and find it.
I'm kidding. But anyway, getting back to what really made the difference was that list of my ideal life and us both getting clear on our ideal life. One, seeing that they matched up and included each other. And that's how we began basically rewriting our financial life and our dream life together.
So you were talking to each other, understanding what the other liked or disliked, and trying to find out if you could be compatible there. Is that basically what you ended up doing?
Correct.
Okay.
Correct. Because if Chris said, oh, I want to live, you know, so-and-so and live, you know, in a tent in wherever, I'd be like, wait, time out. That doesn't work for me.
Right.
That didn't happen.
But
so many couples don't even talk about that.
Yeah, we don't go there. Unfortunately, we don't go there enough with each other. But that's part of what I'm understanding now as we go through this. The importance of having an understanding, especially when it comes to money, which is a big issue. And when we come back, as I said, the question was, what is more important, the financial understanding or sex in a relationship? This is Home and Family Finance. I'm your host, Paul Berry.
This broadcast of Home and Family Finance originally aired March 12th of this year.
You're listening to Home and Family Finance. I'm your host, Paul Berry, on the Radio America Network. My guests today are here to talk about a very important topic. What do you know about your partner when it comes to dollars? Marlo and Chris Felton have written a couple of books. One is called Couples Money, and the other book they've written is called The Prosperity Factor. But what they're really saying here is the importance of financial fidelity. And Marlo, is that as important as sexual fidelity?
I really think that it is as important, and in some cases can be more important. Oh. I've committed financial infidelity, but not sexual infidelity. And certainly sexual infidelity is very serious and very damaging to a relationship, but they're both very similar. And it's financial infidelity is often seriously overlooked and downplayed because it still erodes trust in a relationship, which is so incredibly important. And, you know, think about the emotional charge we put on money. Mm-hmm. We put as much of an emotional charge on money as we do sex. So why wouldn't it be as damaging to commit financial infidelity?
Very interesting.
And Chris?
Go ahead, Chris.
Well, I mean, it gets created because, once again, I mean, I think one of the challenges that happens in relationships is there's just a gap in expectations. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I have my expectations. She has her expectations. We both think we're right. And so because we don't understand it, and there's a gap there because there's no communication, because we'd rather not talk about it. We'd rather talk about superficial stuff. Then what it does is it leads to lack of clarity. And that was the thing that, you know, Marlo and I got mm-hmm. on the same page together. And we're like, okay, this is what we want. But we realized that we had to put some emotion to why we wanted to save money, because saving money was logical, wasn't emotional. So if you're not really clear on what you're doing, then you're just going to do whatever unconsciously and spend money and blow it. And you're never going to have the realization that even spending a dollar that's not moving you closer to your goal is not going to keep you moving to what you really, really want, because most people don't know what they want.
So. And I love your 12 things. I mean, the thing that I noticed you said in these, that it's not I or me, it's they. They say and feel they're on the same page. They have a mutually agreed upon financial segregation system. They focus on what they want. They respect money, theirs, others, and each other's. They feel their money is good and they feel they deserve it. They share a dream and are committed to creating that reality. They utilize each other's strengths to work toward their goals together. They have fun, yet they take their finances seriously and treat household finances as a business. They see money as theirs, regardless of the direct source. They hold each other accountable and maintain a positive attitude toward money. That sounds, you know, that's just some of these, and that makes such perfect sense. Why don't we just do that? Why don't we know that, guys?
That's a great question, Paul. And I'll tell you, from all of our years of experience working with different couples, the reason that I use they is because it's a union. It's an agreement, and it's a marriage. And the best relationships share the best. The relationships, when I go into a situation, I meet with a couple,
yeah,
and they start talking about, well, that's her debt or that's his, mm-hmm, that, I already know that there's some underlying relationship problems.
Interesting.
That's the red flag.
Yep. You can hear it. You know it right away. You can, yes, just tell.
Uh-huh.
Who should start the discussion? Let's get right to it. So if my audience who's listening, I'm unhappy. How do I just start this discussion? I think we ought to talk about money and my partner doesn't want to. How do you start that?
Well, no, it's bringing up, I mean, the best kind of phrasing that I've seen and we teach people is, you know, if I was approaching Marla, I'd say, hey, Marla, I want to visit with you about something around our money and finance, but I'm concerned you're going to get angry at me. And she'd say, well, no, I won't. Well, are you sure? Like, I mean, it's really bothering me. It's something that's been on my mind, and I think we really need to visit on it. But I just want to make sure that it doesn't end in a fight, and we don't get angry. And you know, can we be really calm in this conversation? And so, kind of stating that up front kind of disarms them, and they usually want to make an agreement that they're not going to get angry. But that's the best, yeah, kind of authentic.
Setting the stage.
Yeah,
guys, I'm out of time. Look, where can I get your book? Where can I find your book?
It's on Amazon, or you can go to our website, couplesmoney.com.
Couplesmoney.com. We got to do this again. I've got to talk to you more. It's so important. A million people will divorce this year. A million couples. All right, I got to go. Thanks for being with us. Come back again, would you?
Absolutely.
All right, we'll be right back.
This broadcast of Home and Family Finance originally aired March 12th of this year.
Helping you be safe, smart, and secure with your finances. Welcome back to Home and Family Finance with your host, Paul Berry.
You know, I am very excited about, I guess there are times when I wish that I were the age of my next guest or the little creature that he just brought into the world in the last couple of days, because the technology is so exciting in terms of where we are today. Let me tell you something, folks. Do you know the best invention that's ever been made? And Al, you're going to say, yes, it's the wheel, aren't you? You're going to say the wheel is the best invention that's ever made.
I was thinking the Apple Core, but, you know.
Apple Core. My guest is Jan Ozu. What's the best invention ever made in our lifetime?
Yeah, to me, it's the Internet.
Internet. Okay. Correct. Okay. I think you're both close. Here's the best invention. We are fortunate, and I'm holding up, folks, a smartphone. Never in the history of this of the land, of Earth, has any device been made that will do and affect our lives as much as the smartphone. Does almost everything. Even the greatest invention of this was the wheel. There's no question about it, because it for transportation, for capabilities. But this device, folks, that we take for granted. You know why we take it for granted? A few years ago, my children when I said something to them about men being on the moon. And you know what my daughter said to me? Dad, what's the big deal? Men have always been on the moon. It's always here, Al. The things that we're used to, that's nothing unusual, Jan. It's here. So for a kid, they come into the world, this thing is here. Wasn't it always here? Wasn't the smartphone always available? Couldn't we always pick this thing up and call? My son is 10,000 miles away in Bangkok, Thailand. Yesterday evening, as I'm sitting there, and I'm thinking about him because he broke his leg playing soccer. And I said, I just miss him. And so I hit, what do they call this, FaceTime, Jan, I dialed his number, and it beeped, and there he is. Not only am I talking to this young man, but I am looking at him, you know, and he's showing me his leg, and he's talking to me. So now I 10,000 miles away in a matter of minutes. You know that because Jan is a professional tennis player by Detroit, and he was here before, and I was, at that point, we were talking about the technology. It had not advanced a couple of years ago to where it is now. Jan, you can teach, you teach.
Correct.
What can't you teach?
I mean, I can teach pretty much the whole range from tiny little kids all the way to professional players.
And where can you teach them? Where do they have to be?
Well, today you can teach pretty much anywhere because of the internet, you know, because of the phones, because of the access that we have to technology. I can be sitting right here and actually provide my content to the entire world.
So you can sit here and you can not only teach, you can see your student.
Correct.
You can talk to that student.
Absolutely.
You can advise them as to what they're doing or not doing correctly or not,
mm-hmm.
right?
Absolutely.
And make the difference.
You got it.
How does that impact your business now? How does it impact you in terms of what you're doing now with, I think, what do you call that? You call that for private clubs or something along the lines, or tennis central core.
Well, what it does is it basically provides you mobility, but it provides you an incredible amount of access. You know, you can grow to critical mass pretty much from anywhere around the world in any industry. And that's something that you just could not do before. I can reach anyone around the world and, you know, give them access to my expertise.
From a standpoint of business, how does that work for you? I mean, in other words, you're not limited by your location anymore.
Absolutely not. As I said, you know, when I was teaching tennis on a tennis court, I was limited by the amount of students that I could have on one court at one given hour. Now I can reach thousands, millions of, you know, followers on the internet. My courses have sold hundreds of thousands of copies simply because now I can distribute it through the internet and people can access me by phone, by computer, by any device that they see fit.
How do you see that? I mean, does it reveal itself to you as it happens, or are you thinking ahead, or are you saying, okay, what can I do with the technology today that I couldn't have done? What happens?
You know, that's an interesting question, actually, because when I started, I was not as involved as I am today. So at the time, you know, YouTube and all the other video content providers were really the only tool that I had. And then since then, I've really segued into developing technology myself. So now I'm on, you know, the technological front end of things where I'm mm-hmm. developing, you know, apps and technology that actually suits my business goals. So, you know, it's just incredible what we're able to do now. You know, yeah. I have developed this technology where I can actually see my supply and my demand on one screen. So before, I would just kind of put out fishing lines and the internet would give me access to a lot of fish, if you want to use that analogy.
Yeah, right.
Now what we have done is we want to be able to reach those people in real time. So the technology that we've developed now actually allows me to see who's available right now that can consume my technology right now.
Wow. I think it's just a phenomenal a capability. And what about the people that you work with? What mm-hmm. about other young? I mean, what about from a generational point? Do you find that everybody's dealing with from that point of view, or from the point of view that look at the technology, I'm aware of it, I know what I can do and how we can interact? Do you have that?
You know, there's definitely a gap in terms of ages. You know, the people that I work with, my colleagues, tend to be at least 10 years younger than I am. You know, I'm 44 years old, and I do see that my generation and a little bit older than me is having a harder time, you know, accessing or being comfortable with the speed at which things are changing, you know, and it's creating some friction as well, you know, because it's just going a little too fast.
Yeah.
And when kids grow up with this technology, it's part of their day to day. You know, they know how to make a phone function. You know, I'm in the technological world, but then, you know, I have my phone and my colleague still teaches me a couple of things with my phone that I didn't know I could do.
Yeah, yeah. And the thing is that's surprising to me is I can't do 90% of what this cell phone, this smartphone can do. I don't have the capability. You're saying to me that that's part of your problem as well.
Well, that's part of my problem because I, too, have to adjust to what this incredible device can do.
We'll be right back.
This broadcast of Home and Family Finance originally aired March 12th of this year.
We want you to be part of the show. Email us with your financial questions. Ask about the Defense Credit Union Council. Tell us what topics you want to hear about. Or just let us know what's on your mind. We'll give you the address in a few minutes. But now, more of Home and Family Finance with Paul Berry.
My guest is Jan Ozil, who is a professional tennis player by trade. That's what he chooses to do. But the thing that caught my eye and my ear when we talked about the new technology that allows him to teach tennis from Washington, D.C. to a student in Paris, which is, by the way, where he's from or that area. You're close to Paris. Isn't that,
I am.
Okay.
Right.
He today, using the technology, folks, can teach tennis as if he were on the court there. See a student, talk to him, talk back and forth. That's what the new technology allows to happen. And I think it's fascinating when you think about that because then you say, well, the possibilities are enormous in terms of what can happen. Does his generation understand it? I don't. I mean, I don't know how to use all of this stuff. But apparently you even admit that you can't do all the things that the technology allows you to do.
Certainly. I mean, you know, it's a learning curve. These devices come out with all types of features, and we basically use maybe 5 to 10% of it, you know, if you're having a good day. But most of us, we just call and we tap on apps, but you don't really know that your phone has what's called geofencing that allows you to basically access anything that's in your neighborhood. You know, your phone knows your GPS location. Your phone, you know, can access the microphone, can access the video, can access the camera, can do all these different things that most people don't even know.
Don't even begin to know how to make it do that.
Correct.
You know, just have no idea. And yet, you just had a new baby, which reminds me, and I know you tell the story of your daughter, is a few years ago, I had my son was born, Tally, who you know, and Tally was we had an agreement, Amy, my wife and I, that the kids would not touch any of our electronics, and nobody understands any but Al Peterson because that's what he does. He knows the sensitivity of it, and so I had said to him, the children are not to play with any of our devices in the house. Just you know, I've got the videos and the tape, and I got all this stuff lined up, and I paid a Kyocera system that was supposed to be the best. And so I came home from the office, and I walked in. Tally, my oldest at 5 years old, was in my office, and he was at the television, and he was or whatever else was there, and I hit the ceiling. So I at the point I controlled myself. And I walked into the kitchen. I said, Amy, she says, yeah, honey. I said, why are you doing? She's doing what? I said, Tally is in there playing with the equipment. And she looked at me. She said, honey, he's not playing with it. He's programming it. And I looked. I said, what? And I walked back in there, and he's programming this stuff. It's almost second nature to these kids. They have a sense that I would never have. I mean, I'm fighting to get there. He's programming the equipment. He gets it. He understands it. And I think that's what's going to happen with your children as well.
Absolutely. I mean, my daughter, you know, who's now 3.5, started to use our iPad when she was 1.5 years, you know, and she already knew how to swipe videos, you know, from the screen and switch between, you know, the various content that she wanted to watch. And, you know, just the other day, She had I had a really cute interaction with her. She has this imaginary friend that she talks to, and she has a fake phone. You know, at one point, she just said to her fake her imaginary friend, "Give me a second. I'm going to WhatsApp you," which was incredible. She's 3 and a half, and she knows the difference between a phone call and a WhatsApp call. You know, so.
And you just look at them and like, and they do. They really
it's
do know.
Baffling.
Talk to me about your colleagues. I mean, do you guys have this kind of conversation when you're sitting down, or in your case, in your business, do you sit down and say, okay, here's what we think's going to come up? I mean, how do you program yourself to be ready for the next? The next event, the next technology that's available to you?
Well, it's always the common thread and the common trend is always doing things faster and better. So when you're in the industry, it's pretty easy to gauge where it's heading. Okay, when you're not, obviously, you see these devices, they come as like single units. But the trend is very clear. You know, now it's all about empowering as many people as you can, you know, just giving them instant access to things in real time. Mm-hmm. That's where it's heading. People just don't want to wait. The consumer just wants to be served as we speak. Every piece of technology that's going to come out right now is going to have that embedded.
So who wins the game here, Jan? What I mean by that is you're in business. You know, you're a teacher. You teach, and there are other teachers around. How do you make sure that you are the winner? Because if you don't understand the technology as well as your compatriot, your competition, mm-hmm. then do they win the game?
You know, what's going to happen, unfortunately, is we are in the middle of a paradigm shift as we speak. You know, you have the old way is fighting with the new way, and you can't fight technology just like you couldn't fight the train when it came along, you know, railroad. And, you know, there's always a paradigm shift, and we're in the middle of one right now. That's why you have so much chaos in the world. And I think ultimately the people who win are the people that will embrace the technology as the newest tool to, you know, for mm-hmm. our world. And it's no different than anything else.
Is it a generational battle? I mean, am I battling your generation? Are you all battling within your generation? Do you understand? I mean, what's the divide here?
I think the divide is you have people that embrace technology and people who don't. There are people in your generation that have embraced technology just as well, and they're just as savvy as I am. And then you have people that will fight it, you know, tooth mm-hmm. and nail, and those will lose their jobs and, you know, will very quickly see that they're being left behind, because there is an educational part of it where if you don't learn quickly right now, a year from now, you're going to be a dinosaur.
Interesting. So you have to know what you don't know and program for that, or at least plan for that.
Or surround yourself with people that do know.
It's
not always having to learn it yourself.
I hope you're understanding what I'm trying to get across here. Jan Alzu is a professional, but he is impacted by the professionalism of the equipment. We'll be right back. You're listening to Home and Family Finance here on the Radio America Network. My name is Paul Berry. I'm pleased to have you with me. My guest is named Jan Alzu, a professional tennis instructor, trainer, who now not only trains at his club locally, but he also trains if you're in Paris or in Bangkok. It doesn't make any difference. The technology now allows him to do what he couldn't have done just a few years ago. He can now transport himself to any location in the world and talk to, back and forth, a potential student and train them, watch them hit the ball. And that's what you're capable of doing. Is that what you do?
That's correct. You know, this is very easy. You have the technologies available today, whether it's, you know, WhatsApp or FaceTime or, you know, various tools that, you know, we now have access to that allow you to be in contact with your friends and your guests and consumers in real time.
And as I pointed out, and I think it's true, the greatest invention that has ever been made is not the wheel, which for many years was there, but this device called a smartphone, because it has the capability of letting us do anything that we want to do. Indeed, most of us have no idea. I can't do 90% of what I don't know how to operate this to 90%. And I'm not alone in this, Jan. What about with you, your colleagues, the same? Are they just as ignorant of how this really works overall?
You know, the majority of the people, I would say 90% of the people who have smartphones don't know how to utilize the full device, you know, because we mostly call and we just basically tap on apps. And the app will do it for you, which is great. You know, it's supposed to be helpful.
Is that great? Is it great?
I think it is. You know, I think that there is a part of the business that is supposed to, you know, bring to you a fully finished product that helps your life so that you don't have to worry about it.
Yeah. Do we sound different to you? And I'm going to ask Al, our engineer, to join me because just recently here, talking about new technologies, they have put in a new system completely. And he is, as an engineer, Al, how difficult was it to learn the new system? I mean, obviously, you know, broadcasting industry. How difficult is it to adapt this to what you know to make it even better?
It was a bit abrupt because we've been using audio circuits since forever, you know, putting in wiring that conducts audio signals. Instead, all that's been taken out and replaced with a network cable like you would have in an office or, you know, a server facility.
Right.
So everything that travels through here instead of audio travels as digital data.
And from the standpoint of what it does, what it means, does it mean that my audience is going to hear better me and a better signal from the station?
Much better, yeah. There's no hum, there's no distortion. If anything, what they're going to hear is a new transparency, you know, basically noiseless audio.
And here's an interesting question because we walk through and we remember with all our stuff sitting around here, right? And we're putting in this stuff. And I'm looking at it and I'm saying to myself, is this antiquated? Is this the latest?
All it takes is just a few years for that to happen. If you have a computer that's more than 5 or 6 years old, it's already a generation or more behind.
What can we do about nothing, I guess? What can we do, Jan? We can't.
There is nothing that you can do. It's heading that way. You just have to embrace it.
Yeah, yeah. And hope that somebody's willing to buy the generation that you have.
Or get as much mileage out of it as you can.
But that's just the way of the world. I mean, how fast is this going? What's going to happen here? I mean,
I couldn't even tell you that. If I had the answer for that, I would be in a much loftier place now.
I'm just amazed at it. I'm really amazed about it. You're right. If we knew the answer to it, because that's really what's going to happen. What do we buy? What do you say to the manager, the owner of the station? Here's what you need to buy to be up to date.
It's like anything else. If you're buying computers or whatever, you go to a store to get a computer, just get one that's as recent as it could possibly be, that's got the features you need, and that it could be expandable to handle other things down the road, scanners, USB, all kinds of things.
Make it compatible for whatever may happen or what you think may happen. Yeah,
as best guesses you can manage.
Yeah, and that's what you have to do in your business.
Well, actually, you know, if you start to look at the trends, though, you know, because you want to look at the leaders in technology and what they do, right? And to me, Apple is actually a good one to follow if you want to kind of get a grasp on what's going on. Now, to avoid having to switch iPhones every couple of months, they've actually created this plan where you pay a subscription fee. And, you know, every time there is a new device that comes out, all you do is you just go and return your old phone, and then they give you a new one.
Okay.
They might up your subscription fee just a little bit, but I think that that's where it's going to head because the technology is going so fast that I think eventually the leaders in their field, you know, the captains of industry, whether it's computer, you know, iPhones or so forth, will basically provide you with a plan so that you can just turn to that old technology and get the newest one.
Congratulations on your new baby, and thank you for joining us. You see, I'm excited about this. I know I'm way behind, but I'm watching and seeing how things happen and they change. All right, I got to get out of here. Thank you, Al, for joining me. Thank you, Jan. This is Home and Family Finance. See you next week.